I would like to welcome everyone to the 10th in this continuing series on redaction of Babylonian Talmud, the Chasimus HaShas. I would like to, I mentioned it on the Megillah Nevochim Shir, but I think I might have gotten the gender wrong. I want to wish a mazel tov to Jake and Devorah Greenberg for the baby girl, which they have named Penina
Rachel.
Rachel.
Is that right?
I know, it's Penina. Right, Rachel.
Sorry, Jake.
Tisco, Legadla, Letera, Ulukhupa, Lemaisen, Tavim. It's a wonderful thing to have a girl. I just want to tell Jake that the Rambam begins Hilchos Talmud Torah with the fact that Noshim are potter from Talmud Torah. Why should the Rambam begin Hilchos Talmud Torah by saying that Noshim are potter from Talmud Torah? Besides all the possible political innuendos, which are obviously not the pshat of the Rambam, the reason is for any. Of none other that this is the first part of the Mishnah Torah, the Nashim HaPater. In other words, every part of Hilchos Yesodei Torah and Hilchos Deis is Chayiv. So from that, we see the Rambam must have certainly held that Uvoi Sidbak is a din on women too as well as men. And the Rambam's Raya is clearly from the Shonamis, which we learn a Kabbalah Spanei Arav, in Zion and Sukkah. So I want to wish that this young daughter of yours should always be zeichet and medubek the Talmid Chachamim, and they should have a lot of nachs from her. Okay. Now, we have so far brought many, many examples of the editing of the Shas. And in particular, in the last few examples, we've spoken about that many times the Shas will direct the Perush of a Mishnah towards what the Shas believed to be the accepted minik and anhaga of Klai Yisrael regarding that specific issue. We spoke about this in Bava Kamma, we spoke about this in Tamur regarding Mikvayis. And so clearly, what one would deem the dialectics and the Perush of the Chukim, which ostensibly, are cannot go unnoticed within the Sugi of the Shas, in a certain sense, was the means by which the Gemara was trying to direct the Perush of Braises and Memeres to what it deemed to be Halacha L'Maisa. Now, the fact is that the Sugya that we spoke about in Yud Beis and Aleph and Tabura, where clearly the Gemara is establishing a Shita of Chachamim, Rabin, or the Gisr of Rashi, or Papa, which, as we explained, seems to have been on Hugger without Makor Mishnayas, almost in contradiction to the Mishnayas. This, of course, is picked up certainly by the Rishaynim, whoever looks at the Perush Arash and Perun Beis and Mikvayis and Mishnah Zayin will see that, in fact, the Arash, in a certain sense, tries to direct the Machlokes of Nezer of Yeshua. The fact that Machlokes of Eliezer ben Yankov and Chachamim, this is met with tremendous difficulties. The Chazon Ish in Siman Dalet, in Taharis, Antanina, and Mikvayis, raises serious questions. I'm not going to go into this in detail. I'm giving a lot of Baruch kindness here without actually explaining them. But in any case, you should know there's a lot of literature which may just help to get to in later Shiurim. But the question is, how are we supposed to relate to this? Because certainly, when we go through the Sugya and we see how the Gemara directs the Perush of the Mishnah to a specific halacha, right, which could be perhaps in variance to Tosefta's and to Mishnayas, right? So we have to raise the question, what is the underlying halachic process which both allows for this and in fact accounts for this type of a process? So in other words, what I'd like to do is actually take the 9 shiurim which I've given and put it in some type of a broader historical context. Some of you are sort of like wondering, like, where's Maseira? What happened to Maseira? And Baruch Hashem, Maseira is alive, but it requires us to actually think of Maseira in different terms. Now, so that you shouldn't think that I'm spinning theories for myself, I would like to actually begin with giving an account of one of the great achronim, the person who by Rosh Hashiva, Rabbi Yankov Yaffen, Rabbi Yankov Yaffen, Zechasan Levocha, told me several times he felt he was the last person to have done Mamish Kol HaTera Kula. And that is the Mitzvah of Halashen. Right. Rabbi Yaakov Yaffe considered him to be the last person to have known Kol HaTera Kula. He said his Mesupik may be the Osameyach after that. His Mesupik. But the Nitziv, certainly. Now, the Nitziv wrote many things. He had a small chumash in Volozhin, and that's the famous Hamad Dover, which many people learn. He wrote a perush on the Mechilta, he wrote a perush on the Sifri, he wrote actually a perush on Shas, Gul Mesada, he wrote Shalos Tshuvas. The Nitziv wrote a lot. But I think that his magnus opum was his perush on the She'iltas of Al-Chai Goy. Those of you who are not actually, I think I quoted Rabbi Chai Goin last week here, but I think that Chai Goin brings a slightly different gears of our Gemara in She'ilta Tzadik Ches. The first Sefer that was written after the Chasimus HaShas is in fact after the She'iltas of Chai Goin, which I think is around the 9th century, the end of the 9th century, beginning of the 10th century. That's the She'iltas of Chai Goin. It's certainly the first Sefer, the earliest Sefer that we have after the Shas. And in fact, actually there are certain scholars who really want to claim that actually Rav Chai Goin is actually presenting to us earlier redactions of the Gemara before the redaction which we have to know. I personally don't subscribe to that pass. We'll actually devote time to that. Maybe someone will write actually something on this in the next Rishimu. But in any case, the purpose now is not to discuss the Chai Goin, but to discuss the Pelush of the, not only the Pelush of the Tziv on the She'iltas, but actually the Hakdama on the Tziv of the She'iltas. The Pelush of the Tziv of the She'iltas is called Ha'amek Sha'ala. She'ala, for good reason, right? And it's a tour de force. It's published by Mosad Rav Kook in actually three volumes. And the Nitziv has a very, very long introduction to his work. It's actually three introductions. And there the Nitziv unravels a rather complicated, very sophisticated account of the development of the evolution of the Torah Sheh Be'al Peh within a historical context. And it's a, I have to say, I mean, not that the Tziv is by Haskama, it's a tour de force. And I think that he has very, very interesting ideas, which I'd like to speak about. And using these ideas, I would like to actually sort of like present sort of like the foundations and bases of a broader understanding of the dialectics in commentary. The Talmud and commentary and the Ga'idim and the Shainim and Achronim, it'll perhaps allow us to understand really the dynamical forces which were involved throughout the process of the oral law, and maybe we'll use that to try to understand a little bit the types of observations, conclusions that we reached, right, along the last several lectures, last Shiurim. Now, the Nitziv, I actually spoke a little bit about this, actually, the last Shia, when I spoke about the Pesha Bessel of Ejik, speaks about two types of Meseres, two types of traditions, Meseres Halima and Meseres Hamaisa. But Rabbi Yashabel, being a good brisker, right, tends to create two dinim that are devoid of historical context. I mean, Rav Chaim somehow is not really interested in the historical context of Sogias, he's interested in placing things in absolute, non-temporal halacha categories. However, the Tziv is much more historical. The Tziv begins, the first Hagdama of the three Hagdamas in the Hamak Sheila. He's called Darka Shaltera, and it's called Kidmas HaEmek. And there the Tziv says that there are two aspects of the Torah, right? It says that the end of Devarim, Uviminoi, Eish Das Lamoi. And the Tziv says there's two aspects of the Torah. It's what's called Eish and it's called Das. Now what's Das? So it says, Das, says the Tziv, is Hamavur Lakol. They're explicit halachas. You call them non-equivocal laws. And they prescribe what to do, how to act. They're very, very practical legal prescriptions. And that's called das. And then, right, like it says, like Koloshin Hakosov Kadas Malasos. And that is a hidden part of the Torah, which is subject, which has to be, which in order to be expressed, has to be subject to investigation and rational methodology. And that's called H, that's called fire. And why is it called fire? Right, so it says, just like in fire, you have several sparks that make the entire fire. So too, for example, a person has to actually, in other words, look out for several things, and basically these things ignite an entire fire and illuminate, and this actually describes the process of pilpul. Now, the Netziv, right, says that not only these two aspects of Esh HaDas, you know, two aspects of the Torah, but in different times in history, they actually, in other words, there are different times in history where each one aspect takes prominence over the other aspect. So the Netziv says, the general rule is, when Klal Yisrael is in Golos, and the Beseira is, is less solid, then in fact Klal Yisrael has to resort to much more of pilpul. In other words, in El Yisrael, certainly where there was a Beis HaMikdash, right? So therefore, there was a clear hanhaga which wasn't subject to, you know, for a need for any type of a dialectic to bring out these hidden aspects of the Torah. However, when Klal Yisrael goes into Golus, and there isn't a Beis HaMikdash, and there isn't past Ruach HaKodesh, there isn't Nevuah, and there's a breaking of Messiah, the Golus somehow lends itself to breaking the Messiah, then Klal Yisrael is in fact actually in need of, in other words, of pilpul, which somehow brings out, you know, through dialectics, the halacha, which, you know, which is hidden within the greater corpus of the oral law. And so the Tzim goes on and speaks about the relationship of Golus to pilpul. He even, interesting, he wants to claim that even Yeshua Melech was goynet, hid away the Arin, according to one sheet in Yuma, precisely because he wanted to prepare Klal Yisrael for pilpul when they would go to Golus Bavel. In any case, basically, and this is in fact actually, in other words, and of course when they come back from Golus after Bavel, so therefore there's a restoration of Hanhaga, of Das, and of course when they go back into the Golus of Rome, in the second, at the second base, the second Mikdash, so once again there's an increasing of pilpul, etc., etc. And this in fact actually is the what the Tziv speaks about. Now, what's important for us to know is, right, I mean, this is a very interesting picture of Jewish history, but what's important to know is, and which I'm going to really speak about, is that to what extent is the generation of pilpul privy to the Kabbalah of previous generations? In other words, let me explain as such. When we look at the Gemara, how much do we know how the Gemara paskened? Now, based upon what I've been saying over the last 9 shiurim, it's clear that we don't really know so much how the Gemara paskened. In other words, we see how the Gemara directed the perush of a mishnah to a specific halacha. We've seen that many times. But in other words, given the entire corpus of Chazal, Tosefta, Sifra, Sifri, it's not very, very clear how the Gemara, right, came to the conclusions. And it could possibly be, as I wanted to say actually last time, that the Gemara was just trying to be perhaps miyash of certain minhagim. Now the fact is that the Tziv says something very, very similar. That the Tziv says, I'm here in the Kidmas HaEmek, it's on page 10, the second column. The Tziv says like this. He says at the very, very top of the column, Mi'acha she'ein lan yediyas beis Rav Ashi b'pi ish, shitas halacha b'rura. We don't really know how of Ashi paskin halachas. I'll call tzorcha talavoy v'lat lois mayim amukim b'chakira. So they're not to understand that a person somehow has to engage himself in a dialectics. In other words, it's better for Chokhmah to come through Kabbalah, through a clear transmission, than somehow to have to discover it. Okay? On the other hand, the Netziv says that there is an aspect of Chakir which is important, because somehow it illuminates parts of the Torah, and, you know, it's Yadlut HaViyadr. In other words, it illuminates aspects of the Torah which are hidden and somehow expands the dimension of the Torah. But what the Tzibah is saying, interestingly enough, is that, in other words, it's not clear to us how Ravashi, who we've seen is the at least the beginning of the editors of the Stam of the Gemara, came to logical conclusions. It's not that he dissected Braises in clear, scholarly ways that are, you know, that which we can examine, right? But in fact, Ravashi, what you know, many ways, used what we call Pelushim Dechukim, and lines of argument, because he was coming, he wanted to come to halakhic conclusions, which perhaps a person would not empirically come to then, but nonetheless, this was the Kabbalah that the Amoraim had to the door of Ravashi. Now, what's interesting is that what happened after the Kabbalah? After the Kabbalah, we have the Rishonim. In fact, not only do we have the Rishonim, but there was the majority of this Shia has been actually to understand how the Rishonim have understood the Kabbalah. Now, the Netziv says, actually earlier on page 9, at the end of the second column, the Netziv says, is that Hashem Chafetz Laban Tzidkoi L'shanen Borak Chovas Shal Torah, to sharpen the blade of the Torah, the steel of the Torah, L'hadru Torah Bahadra, L'man Nachazik V'Torah Shem B'Gvura, Golak Kavod HaTorah Mibavul L'Medidah Sofas, Eretz Leiro Ora Kabbalah Sedura. In France, there was no Kabbalah. The Torah was exiled to France from Bavel, where they in fact what? There was no Kabbalah. And therefore it was necessary for the Talmid Chacham in France to in fact actually to find the truth of the Torah through Chakir and Bilbil. And that's the Tosfos he speaks about. Interestingly enough is that Tzibah claims that the Tosfos did not have really a direct Kabbalah, but rather they only had the text of the Gemara, and when they saw the text of the Gemara, there was a stilus of the Gemara, and perhaps deals in the sugyas, deals in different sugyas, Tosefta, Sefros, Sefri, then the taste was how to create an entire dialectic in order to somehow reconcile and resolve apparent contradiction to bring the halacha to a underlying resolution. So it seems clearly to me that when we speak about the relationship between the Rishonim and probably ourselves too, right? In contradiction to the Shas, the Kabbalah of Klal Yisrael of the Shas ended with Rav Ashi. We have no way of knowing how Rav Ashi came to his conclusions, right? But rather that Rav Ashi somehow would exhibit a dialectic by which he would direct the halacha towards its, towards the halachic goal, the conclusion that he wanted to direct it to. The generations after, certainly the Ashkenazim, the Rishonim, right, had no idea of this Pesayra, but rather they had to somehow reconstruct from scratch the entire movement and try to somehow reconcile it and resolve it, along with other aspects of Shaf, to come into more objective, underlying theory of the Halacha.
What about the...
The Rambam. Now, very good. Now, what about the Rambam?
I was going to ask about the Riff, but it's the same.
No, the Riff of the Rambam too.
It's the same
so, No. So, like this. So, it turns out the Tziv says, in contradistinction to the Riff and the Rambam, who had more Mesira, I think it's a Mabit somewhere. I think the Mabit somewhere says, I know Rabbi Yankov Yafin quoted me a few times, that the Mabit actually means Rabbeinu Tam, the Mitzvah says himself, that Rabbeinu Tam certainly was a greater Baal Sefer than the Rambam. But why did the Beis Yosef base himself more on the Riff of the Rambam? Of course, they took three people, whatever it is. The Rambam had more of the Mesira of the Ga'idim. The Rambam and the Riff had the Tshuvas of the Ga'idim. I mean, even though the Rambam himself would take the liberty of being Chodek on Ga'idim, but the Rambam had more to serve the Ga'idim. Which means the Rambam represents the more, and the Riff too, represents the more Kabbalistic aspect of the Teresh B'al Peh, whereas the Tosfos represents more the H aspect of the Teresh B'al Peh. Now what's interesting is the Tziv L'Shitasai, the Tziv says, for example, in She'ilta Lamed, and the Tziv says, that says to the Tziv, listen to this, V'lefamim, I'm on the second column now, in Daf Kuf Tzadiches, in Shilta Lamed, the Tziv says, V'lefamim ikim harambam perash ha-mishnah. Sometimes the Rambam would distort, would bend the perash ha-mishnah, kidei l'ukma al halacha, in order to bring it in alliance with halacha. So the Rambam was doing a little bit what the Shas was doing. He would take the Mishnah and somehow interpret it in a way because he wanted to provide a basis for a Kabbalah and Halacha, which you already know. And in fact, actually, the Nesiv says this too. I'm just bringing two examples, which I happen to have marked off. For example, in She'ilta Kuf Chav Ches, right? The Nesiv says, Derech HaGemara, by the way, there's a misprint in the Hamak Shela, says HaGemarar, it should be Gemara. La'akim Perash HaMishnah, to bend the Perash HaMishnah, kedei l'ukma al ha'psak. So he says it's both about the Rambam and both about the Gemara. And that's exactly what I've been saying for the last 10-9 shiurim. In other words, it's not that the Gemara was interested in a scholarly assessment of what the braises of the Mishnah meant. The Gemara was using the Mishnah as the jumping off point for providing the dialectical and hermeneutical underpinning many times, not all times, for halachic praxis. That's what the Gemara was involved in doing. This is what the Gemara did, it's what the Rambam did. In contradistinction to the Rishayim, the Tosfos, and I put the Rambam up, of course, did not reveal to us what his reasons were. In fact, the Rambam said, look at the Gemara, just look at the Mishnah, read the Tosfos Tzav, the Mishnah Torah, and then you're a good from Jew. Ma she'enke, the Tosfos laid it all out. The Tosfos pointed out stiras in the redaction of the Gemara, they would be yashiv sugyas, they would create svaras. In other words, the Tosfos tried to, in a certain sense, in a vacuum, create grand unified Talmudic field theories in order to explain what they saw was, you know, discrepancies either within sugyas or between Tosfos, etc., etc. Now, the fact, yeah.
When we say that Rav Ashi, we don't know how he came to his conclusions. Do we assume that he didn't have a methodology, or just we don't know what it was?
He had a methodology. There was a certain methodology, but the methodology was somehow a way of going from the Mishnah to the halachic conclusion in these cases. In other words, there was a methodology. The Gemara has ways of being medayik in braises. The Gemara has ukimtas. The Gemara says chesurim mixeres. In other words, there is a logic in the Gemara. But the logic of the Gemara is certainly being directed towards a psak halacha, which the Gemara is aware of.
So then the Balei Tosfos, who don't have a Kabbalah on this methodology, what allows them to be able to use the method of Pilpul Chakir in order to come conclusion?
The Tziv says that's what you're supposed to do in Gaulus. The Tziv brings many, many examples of this. That, in fact, for example, the Tziv brings the case of the Gemara in Tezayin Mabez and Tumura of Vassil ben Kanaz, who's Machsir, Halachas Lebashim Esinai, I'll be Derech HaPilpul. And then what the Tziv says, that we see actually in the history of Klal Yisrael, that in times of Gaulus, when the Kabbalah somehow is, put it this way, the Kabbalah is clearly something which has been lost, or we don't have the underlying, you know, methodology of Kabbalah, then we see the Klal Yisrael has to resort to Pilpul. That's what the Tziv says. The Tziv understands this is an aspect of Torah. Which comes out very interestingly enough is, according to the Tziv, which is important, we see the significance of the Chesimus HaShas. The Chesimus HaShas, now the Rambam says in his Hadamah to the Mishnah Torah that when he brings Kisar Vashi, Soif Ba'atikei Torah Shemiyal Peh. What does it mean, Soif Ba'atikei Torah Shemiyal Peh? The Shas, in a certain sense, represents the end of the true Kabbalah. Except the ending of the Shas is a dialectical justification of that Kabbalah. But reconstructing the Kabbalah in terms of all the data, and understanding in terms of the data, that was done by certainly the Rishonim in Sofas and Ashkenaz. Now, yeah.
What are the Tanaim doing when they're making drushes? Are they doing an Eish and reformatting a new dialectic, or are they trying to be Miyasha of the Psukim with what was the practice through Kabbalah's baby even from a very
Well, actually, the what we, Ramaisa, I mean, I've mentioned this several times in the Shi'orim. I mean, my contention is, if you look at my article in the latest volume of Rishimo, my contention is that the purpose of the Mishnah of Rebbe was actually to do away with the methodology of generating halachas through exegesis. In other words, what the Gemara now will do with exegesis is only to justify halachas, which are already, you know, which are already in the canon, either in the Mishnah or Braises or Tosefta's. In other words, the Amorayim will not generate, right, new halachas.
But according to the Darash Hashanim, when the Tanaim...
The Tanaim were trying to bring existing
halachas.
The opinion of Darash Hashanim was that no halach was ever... I think he makes a very radical statement, Kedalko Bakaydash, is that no halach was ever learned from a drasha.
Right, so he's going with a... He's saying it's like a das approach. They were just trying to bend the psukim to fit the Kabbalah.
But in other words, who really cares? Because the Maaseh, the Gemara... Even the Gemara will bring braises, but the ikka parts of the Gemara, I mean, many times our Gemara is at variance with the drashas we see in the Sefra. Right? And that's clear. So, in other words, what happens is that, in other words, the Gemara will use the drasha only to justify a halacha and a Tanayic halacha, which, in fact, it was going to say, Minahane mili. In other words, the Gemara will use a drasha to justify halacha that already knows. Now, in fact, what was before the Mishnah? That I can't tell you. The Darash Rishonim wants to claim that they didn't know anything for the drashas. I find that hard to believe. But this is not the place to argue the Darash Rishonim on that. But the fact is that the Rambam in this Hakdama to the Mishnah Torah says clearly that Rav entered the Sefra to explain the exegetical basis of the Mishnah. It means, what was Rav doing? Rav was not creating original drashas. Rav had the Mishnah and was creating those drashas which formed the basis of the halach of the Mishnah. But Rav was not himself generating new halachas. Okay?
So if the Gemara is not looking for a real historical truth to the Mishnah,
right?
What does it need the Mishnah for at all?
So I claim the Gemara...
The Rav at least was honest in that he said, you don't need the Gemara, you don't need the Mishnah, you just need me.
So I'll explain to you why. I think there's really three answers to this. Answer number one is it's an open question. For some reason, Rebbe decided that we have to abandon generating halachas from psukim. So, why do I need the Mishnah? The Mishnah is a way of displacing exegesis. In other words, if you want to learn a halacha, you can't look at the whole pasuk. So therefore, what do you look? You look to a Mishnah.
But what's the Mishnah?
Number one. In other words, I can't create an original drasha was done in the Mishnah. And that's why many times the Gemara, the Sukkah of the Gemara, will be at variance with the Sefer and the Sefri. Because, in other words, that's number one. Number two, it could possibly be that the Mishnahs do give the outline. In other words, it might have been in the time of Rebbe, there were probably many ways of dashing the psukim. The Mishnah was the standard halacha, for more or less, that was used. And therefore, they created the Mishnah to create at least more or less the guidelines of the Shachatai of the Gemara. In other words, the Gemara has to form with the guidelines of the Mishnah, as opposed to any new exegesis. So you do need the Mishnah. Because the Gemara can't go against the Mishnah. In other words, there might have been a drasha from a pasuk that goes connected to the Mishnah, but the Gemara can't do something like that. So the Mishnah basically, even though the Gemara might interpret the Mishnah liberally, the Mishnah basically, you know, presents the guidelines that the Gemara doesn't steer too far away from the Mishnah. In other words, interpretation of the Mishnah could be absolutely be sort of like, you know, novel and use poetic license, but they'll never be in variance with the Mishnah, number two. And number three, I think really the point is that many times the Gemara will reach a conclusion which is based upon an analogy to the Mishnah, which might be at variance to other Tanaic material. And let me give you an example. The Gemara that we spoke about, in Daf Yud-Beis Amud Aleph and Tabula, where the Gemara reaches a conclusion that I can matar all my Shuvim, right? I can matar all my Shuvim through Amshacha. So the Rif Paskins like Ravid, And if you look in the and the Rip Pasak Ravid, if you look at the Bali Ma'or on the Bali Nefesh of the Ravid, right? So he says is that, in other words, he says is that we can ask kashas on the Rif, we can also cast it on the Gemara too. In other words, on the Ravid, we can ask kashas on the Gemara from Mishnayos. So it's interesting, he says, just like we can't ask kashas, the Gemara didn't ask these kashas on Ravin's conclusion from Mishnayos and Mikvayos. Well, we won't ask the same kashas on what? On the Rif from Mishnayos and Mikvayos. Comes Rav Kiva Eger, there's a good Rav Kiva Eger there, it says, what are you talking about? Because sometimes the Derech of the Poskim is the Paskin, not based upon kashas and Teirutzin, but based upon, like an analogy. An analogy to a Mishnah. So it could possibly be that many times the Gemara will reach a conclusion which is analogous to the Mishnah, right? That it could only reach that conclusion given the authority of the Mishnah. If the Gemara was actually going through what the Rabbi Kiva says, Kushais Mnutzachais, right? The Gemara would never go with that Mishnah. So in other words, the Mishnah provided, in a certain sense, the legal authority that the Gemara would make different types of analogies which inherently appeal to the Mishnah. That's what I want to say. But in any case, right, in any case, as we've seen very clearly, in other words, the Shach Vatalia, very often the Gemara, is a very calculating Shach Vatalia. It's not a Shach Vatalia that's looking to explore, perhaps, what is the absolute historical truth, however, whatever that means, we've spoken about this, of this Mishnah, of this Braisa. But it's a Shach Vatalia that even though it will look for a, it will look to base itself upon a, you know, upon hermeneutical reasoning, nonetheless, the Shach Vatalia many times is very directed towards a Moskada that the Gemara wants to reach. And that's fine. That's a, in other words, what that is that's a, an expression that the Gemara was operating with a Messiah. The Gemara was not creating dialectics from scratch. However, that Messiah of the Gemara, according to the Tzid, has been lost to us. And the Rambam also had a Messiah, but we don't know how the Rambam arrived at that Messiah. What we're left is Rishayim like the Taisvis and the Ritva and the Rashba, who somehow have to recreate the entire Sugya from scratch, and therefore because of the attempt to reconcile and to resolve, contending sugyas and braises and Tanaic sources, they have to revert to all the types of asvaras interpretations, and that's the process of Eish.
Does the Eish of this generation become the Das of the next?
In a certain sense, yes. In a certain sense, yes. It becomes very, very Kabbalistic. In a sense, well, yes and no. It does in a certain sense, which is very Kabbalistic. You know, the goof of a higher island becomes the shomer of a lower island. But the nafkamina is that we can jump over. In other words, in principle, I mean, the Rosh of the Rambam Paskin, a Rish can argue on a Goyin. In other words, you can't say the Hasidish psak is more like you're saying. If you have a pacha of the previous generation, so there, in other words, their Eish becomes our Das. But if you have a Litvisher approach that, you know, up to the Gemara, anything goes, so therefore, you know, a person can undo the age of previous generations, so long as, like the Rosh says in Daf Lamed Gimel and Sanhedrin, he can bring rayas from the Shach Vatalia of the Gemara. So in other words, everybody's age ends at the Shas. At the Shas, that's Das. So I think over here, we have, and I mean, these ideas which I'm saying, they're grounded in the Tziv. Now, I recommend that all of you read that Dhamma of the Tziv because it's a very, very lengthy Hagdama. And there's a lot of things there, and I'm picking things in and out of here of the Tziv. Of course, I'm selectively reading the Tziv, so if you don't know the Tziv, you'll have to believe my Messiah in the Tziv. But what's interesting is that the Tziv actually tries to give, in a certain sense, a metaphysical understanding of this process, which is interesting, because I think a lot of people here are having a difficulty with metaphysics. In other words, basically, like, now where's the metaphysics over here? So the Tziv says a very, very interesting thing. The Tziv says, in the second Hakdama, which is on page 17 of the first paragraph, the Tzev says there's two aspects of a Kadosh Baruch Hu's relationship to the world. Right? One is, says the Tzev, He brings a pasuk in Mishlei. For Eya Etzle Amoy Amon, for Eya Shashum Yom Yom is Chachekas Lefanav B'chol Eitz. Now, says in Itziv, there's two things here. What is Tzirifui Shema Shebehem Nivra Olam Ve'en Lezachedek Inyan on Hagaklal? There's a certain aspect of Tzirifui Shemas. The Ramban, for example, says that the entire Torah Shemes HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that has no connection with Hanhaga at all. That's purely metaphysical, right? There's no Anikra Shashum Yom Yom. That every day Kodesh Baruch was Bahach, Basalta, Ba'em, Ka'odah, Bishtzeh, Ba'dav. Kodesh Baruch was playing with the words, Kiviyachal. And then there's a second chaylik. Shenitan Lalo, something is given to us, the Shmur, Ba'lois, the Dul, the Kodesh Baruch, and Hakas, Oilam. In other words, there's two aspects of the world. There's this Tzilufi Shemus, which is the underlying grand unified field theory of the names of God, which accounts for the Torah, which encompasses the entire world, like the Nefesh HaChaim, the Torah. And then there's the Hanhaga, right? Hanhaga, which is the second chaylik of the Torah. And somehow, says that the Tziv, it's rather difficult to get out of the Tziv, but after looking through the entire Tziv, this is my conclusion, the Tziv is, that somehow, Klal Yisrael, in the course of history, by going through every Hanhaga, somehow touches base with this larger metaphysical Tzirufi Oisius of the Torah, and that basically sort of like encompasses and covers the entirety of Torah Shebi'al Peh, and at the end everything will be huksa to the Chumash, v'sholem al Yisrael. In other words, that somehow it's almost like Be'itach Hishena. There's two processes that are going on. At the end we'll see that the Hanhag of Klal Yisrael basically touched place with, in other words, the entirety of all of metaphysical reality, which is the Torah HaKaduma, which Kodesh Baruch Hu looks and creates the world, and somehow this will be brought out at the very, very culmination of history. So, in other words, what happens enough is that it's almost like Mitzida Mitzideinu, but of course not Mitzida completely, but almost like the Mitzida Mitzideinu of the, like the quasi Hasidish Nefesh HaChayim, that Mitzida, everything is a Kodesh Baruch Hu, Mitzideinu, there's a, you know, there's a gap, and that somehow ultimately it's all one thing in a certain sense. But that's what the Tziv is saying. So we have in the Tziv not only a historical account, which in my opinion is a very real account of how the Torah develops in generations with Golis and Geulah, etc., etc., but we even have a metaphysical account, which gives a metaphysical interpretation to all these events and accounts for different aspects of what is Karach, what is Tudinim, you know. Even the Tziv, even though it was the Baal Pluta, the Beis Halevi, and the Yeshiva, he adopted these two dinim, these two aspects. And this accounts for the different dimensions of Torah that somehow, at the end, klaptach, zusammen, they come together at the very end of history. While they appear to be opposed now, they somehow, they're in dialectical, you know, relation to each other, and this brings about the culmination of history. So in other words, the fact is this is my opinion in the Tziv, is a very, very compelling understanding of how the Torah Shebi'al Peh evolves. And that's really a little bit what we've been speaking about for the last nine shiurim. The directed dialectics of the Gemara is what I would call Kabbalah, Das. And that characterizes the dialectics of the Gemara. In other words, our dialectics, Tosfos, Rashba, Ritva, Kiveger, Rav Chaim, our dialectics are a different type of dialectics than the dialectics of the Gemara. Dialectics of the Gemara are directed dialectics. That's called Kabbalah. That Kabbalah ends with Rav Ashi. Our dialectics are an Eishmor dialectics, which look to, you know, to create, you know, logically consistent and universal and grand unified theories, you know, which give a yachal like a Kodesh Baruch Hu is mitzav the oisius of the entire metaphysical, you know, title which underlines the entire world. So, the There's no place for scholarship. There's no historical truth. There was a Kabbalah in Klal Yisrael, which ended with Rav Ashi. The dialectics we see in the Gemara only give insight how the Gemara wanted us to understand the relationship of praxis to Rebbe's Mishnah. And that's what the Gemara is. Rashi says in three places in Brachas, in Heyamad Aleph, Yonafud Beis, Tegmem Zaynud Beis, that Gemara is the Gemara's dialectical understanding of the Perush HaMishnayos. That's what the Gemara is doing, which means the Gemara is using the Mishnayos in order to bring to light, lay down what the Gemara understood to be the praxis based upon the Kabbalah as it existed to Rav Ashi. But like the Rambam says, that was the end of the Ma'atike Teirah Shabayal Peh. After that, the field is open. Osteo Ben Kanaz. After that, all of a sudden, we have the Tosefta, we have the Sifra, we have Stilas and Sugyas. And after that, we have to create more and more grand, unified theories of Teirah, right? Which constitutes what the Nesim would say, the Aish component of Teirah Shabayal Peh.
Would you connect Aish with the definition of textual truth that we talked about? Up until the time of the Gemara, there's some absolute level of Masairah.
No, because Kabbalah can also be textual truth. Textual truth means the way the Gemara understood the Mishnah, right?
That's not Masairah then, that's the way that they are reconstructing the understanding of the Mishnah.
But that's what I would call Masairah. Now, what Masairah is not something which is transmitted from generation to generation. Masairah is a Hanhaga, a Kabbalah, and what we're doing is we're using the methods of dialectics to arrive at the conclusion, those conclusions which constitute the Kabbalah of Klal Yisrael. And let me tell you something, many people can do that bizman hazeh. Many places can see that people are knowing in a certain way. It's l'chayr, not in accordance with what the Shulchan Aruch is. And the place can, well, make all different types of tests, the miyashiv, the minig of Klal Yisrael, in accordance, you know, with the sources. In other words, textual truth means is that the Gemara is not interested in the historical truth. The Gemara is interested in, right, how does the text fit into our Messiah? In other words, in what way do we have to look at the text in order to maintain the Messiah? Right? After the Gemara, all we have is textual truth because we can't argue on the Gemara. But what we can do is we can interpret the Gemara's interpretation of the Messiah, and that's a second type of textual truth. So in other words, you could have textual truth in Das and also textual truth in H2.
For textual truth in H, it's a level more abstracted.
Right, not even more abstract, I would say even more so. Textual truth in H is actually less Masoretic, and actually, in other words, it's less textual truth because a person is trying to arrive at some type of an objective understanding, you know, of the entirety of Teirah Shabayal Peh, you know, by at most trying to understand the conclusion of the Gemara. Now, for example, when Rishonim saw that the Gemara in Tabor was, you know, in opposition to Mishnayos and Tosafot, they would sometimes try to interpret the sense of Mishnayos and go to interpret the Gemara in terms with that. It was textual truth is more of an objective truth. It's not historical truth because it accepts the conclusion of the Gemara. It doesn't jump over the Gemara to say what was the original pshat of the Mishnah. But textual truth is more of a historical truth in that it will try to understand the Gemara as it's lodged or, you know, pivoted within the greater corpus of, you know, of rabbinic literature. But it's still all textual truth. Okay, fine. Okay, now, Baruch Hashem, right, I think that this is like a slight introduction. It's actually what's called greatest hits in the Netziv HaDamba. The Ma'aseh Derech Agav, there's some very nice things in the Sagdama, which are halacha l'maisa. For example, just Derech Agav, I mean, little tidbits from the Sagdama, I want to get people to read the Netziv. But Rosh Yeshiva called the Netziv as Rebbe. It's Rebbe. But the Netziv Tainis, it's actually on page 30, in the second column on page 30, the Netziv says the iser of teaching a goy Torah is you teach him pilpul shel Torah. Because if you teach a goy a Mishnah or teach him Shulchan Aruch, there's no iser in Magid Devav Le'ankev, Chukah Berli Yisrael. The Zivah says the iser is to teach the goy pilpulish al Torah. So if you don't give the goy a shir klali, you sort of like give him like sort of like a very, you know, straight shir, tell him, you know, maskanas, that's fine according to the Zivah. He says it halacha l'maisa. They're just doing a thing. He says he brings for the Gemara there in the Darim that Moshe Rabbeinu gave Pupula to Klal Yisrael, the Iker Torah Klal Yisrael Pupula Shal Torah. So in other words, you can teach the guy something which is not Pupula Shal Torah. I'm curious whether he means that by women too. In other words, he means by women too that the Iker Israel not teach them Torah Shal Torah, but teach them Pupula Shal Torah Shal Torah. I don't know, it's all here. But anyway, the tips are like that. In any case, this is the tip. Now, the interesting thing, which I want to say with, and I want to really conclude with, is the following thing. That it's clear, as a result of this analysis, is that there's absolutely no basis for any type of a higher critical analysis of the text of the Gemara of the type that Halivni does. Because the Gemara is not interested in the original context of a Mishnah or a Braisa. It was not interested in that. The Gemara is interested in directing the dialectic from the Mishnah to what the Gemara understands to be on, you know, the Kabbalah Samaisa, the true Kabbalah. The Gemara might make chakiras, but many times the chakiras are, in a certain sense, at the end, the maskana is basically what the Gemara understands to be the correct halachic conclusion, the correct halachic praxis. So in other words, the Gemara is not open to any type of higher scholarly scrutiny. Because that's not the purpose of the Gemara. In other words, not only is there no historical truth, textual truth is not objective. The Gemara clearly is placing the Braises and the Mishnah, the Braises and the Mengras and the different Amorayim until Ravashi within a certain context so that the Halacha, the Hasikah Shmaiz Libel Hilachasa, becomes rather apparent. Or even if the Gemara doesn't reach a clear conclusion, the Gemara is certainly creating the contours which will define, you know, the Hachor perhaps for the next generation. So, there's no basis for any higher critical approach in second-guessing the Gemara's understanding of Maimonides. The Gemara knows very well what it's doing. The Gemara is operating with a Kabbalah. That's what it was doing. So there's no room for any higher critical analysis. Higher critical analysis is irrelevant to the Gemara, as it would be irrelevant to a person who writes a novel and decide that the second paragraph doesn't follow the first paragraph. He would decide that maybe the person who wrote the second paragraph didn't write the first paragraph, but in fact actually it was the same author. In other words, clearly the Gemara, in a certain sense, and that's what I want to quote from the Netziv, it's a closed book. And in a certain sense, that's really what the canon of the Gemara is. And to quote the Netziv again, at the, you know, the second column on page 10, Ain la the ideas based Rav Ashi with P.E. Shitas Halacha Buru. We have no idea how Rav Ashi, and he says Rav Ashi means the stam of the Gemara, from Rav Ashi to Istayim Tabuna by Rav Yesen. We have no idea how they wanted to reach Halacha. We have no insight that it's a closed Pandora's box. And therefore, Al Kain, therefore, we can't undercut and reconstruct the historical process, and therefore subject it to a higher critical analysis, but rather, all we can do is continue the act of pilpul and build upon it. And that's, I think, really the most central statement that the Tziv has, especially for us in understanding what the redaction of the Talmud is. The Talmud is a closed box. The dialectics of the Talmud are just presenting us with a type of a methodology by which we have a interface with the analysis, you know, and the dialectics, which can, you know, generate chakiras and pilpul, etc., etc. But that's all we have. And we have no more than that. So the Talmud, Baruch Hashem, was redacted at the right time. The right time. And there are, in other words, in hindsight, there are no coincidences in history. And I think this is really the main message of the Nesef. Okay, I think we're going to draw to a close over here. These are interesting ideas to think about. I'm sure that many of you have different reactions to this. Actually, there's a lot more to speak about. Actually, we're only beginning the subject matter. This is actually an introduction to the reduction of the Talmud. And there's many things to speak about. I'm particularly interested in understanding, really, the orders of the Talmud, Zoraim, which don't have a Babylonian Talmud, and Tyre, which has no Babylonian Talmud. What was the Derech of Limud in the yeshivas in Bavel? I mean, was there a Gemara on Tyrus which was lost, which we don't have, or was never attempted? These are very important issues which have to do with the redaction of the Talmud. Of course, we only brought in about 20 sugyas up to now. There's hundreds and hundreds of sugyas we could have brought, but then this internet shiur will have to go on for the next 20 years. That will take a lot more funding than we have, at least in the present moment. But in any case, I think that there are interesting ideas we could all think about, and we look forward to speaking with you, Mishem, next week for an undisclosed place in Yerushalayim HaKadosh. I bid you kol tov.